welcome to the Healthy Life Redesign Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kimberly O'Brien. As a naturopathic doctor, I help you to transform your health and amplify your energy with nutrition, natural medicine, and neuroscience. Each week, I share life-changing health habits and mindset shifts to help you break through the struggle and become the person you know you are meant to be. Are you ready to let your health and happiness come naturally? It's time to own your health and live a life you love. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 14 of the Healthy Life Redesign Podcast. In today's episode, I am so lucky to have Dr. Christina Bjorndal joining us. She is an expert in the natural treatment of mental health conditions, so that includes things like depression and anxiety, as well as other concerns like bipolar disorder or eating disorders. And Dr. Christina is a fellow naturopathic doctor who practices in Edmonton, Alberta, and she has helped so many people to transform their health through the strategies that we share. She is an author, she speaks on the topic, and she is really a true expert because she has also experienced mental health struggles herself, and she shares this in our interview. So I know you're going to love the show, and I also know that this is a show that can be helpful to so many people. So I really hope that you will share. If you gain inspiration from this episode, please share. As we discuss in this show, mental health concerns are so common, and the odds are there are likely several people in your life that can benefit from what we talk about today. And even if you don't resonate with a mental health diagnosis of any kind, the strategies that we talk about are things that can help you to move through a low mood, and also things that can act in a preventative way so that we help to make sure that this doesn't become an issue for you in the future. Before we dive in, I do want to make note that I did have an issue with the recorder that I used to record this episode. So for the first 10 to 12 minutes from here, you will notice that the sound quality is decreased, but do not worry, that does improve. So that'll be around the 12 minute mark or so for you. You will notice a significant improvement. So my apologies for that, and I hope that you enjoy the show. Now let's go. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Healthy Life Redesign Podcast. Today, I'm thrilled to have Dr. Christina Bjorndal with me, who is a fellow naturopathic doctor and the author of Beyond the Label, 10 Steps to Improve Your Mental Health with Naturopathic Medicine, as well as The Essential Diet, Eating for Mental Health. Thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Chris.
No, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
To those listening who may not yet be familiar with Dr. Bjorndal or her books, she's well known as a top expert for the natural treatment of mental health conditions. I'm so excited to have her on the show today because, as listeners may already know, I'm also very passionate about helping my patients with these concerns, and anxiety is also something that I've dealt with myself. So, Dr. Chris, I've recently read your book, which is an incredible resource, and in it you share how it was your own journey with bipolar disorder that has led to the amazing work that you do today. So can you take our audience back through your story and share how you ended up where you are now?
Yes. So whenever I'm asked this question, I always wonder, well, how far back do I go here? Because as I open my book with a discussion about how the neurological and emotional imprinting that happens when you're in utero. And so that can set you up for some mental health challenges down the road, going as far back as that, which a lot of people may not be aware of. And so in my case, I'm adopted. And I think that that did set the stage for me to be somewhat anxious and insecure. But for the most part, my growing up was normal. There was no big traumas. I had a move when I was in the ninth grade, and that was always, it's always a hard time at that age. I was 14, 15, and one of my friends had an eating disorder, and I witnessed that and was quite perplexed by her behavior. I'd never seen that before, somebody binging and purging. And so I asked her about it, and she made a casual remark that, oh, maybe I should consider that too as a way to manage my weight. And a lot of teenage girls are impressionable and self-conscious, of which I was. So I started engaging in that activity, which was bulimia. So that's where a lot of it started, but it was a very, you know, it was very hidden, and I was very secretive, and I didn't really think I had a problem because of the frequency. And I was very overachieving in life. So I was, you know, the typical top student, top athlete, and I continued that overachieving tendency into university, at which point I found myself in unfamiliar territory in my third year of university, where I was depressed and anxious, but I didn't understand what I was going through because I didn't have the language around that. And at that time, this is in the mid 80s, there wasn't a lot of conversation going around or being had about mental health. There was really no conversation going on. So it wasn't until I ended up at UBC, I went to the University of British Columbia, with a friend of mine actually was so concerned about me, she made an appointment for me to go and see somebody. So I went to that appointment, and I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety, put on antidepressants. And that was 3-4 months after that. I ended up having a week with little to no sleep, again, in unfamiliar territory around the symptoms of mania. Mm-hmm. Completely had no clue about that, or didn't know that there was really anything wrong, except for was not my normal behavior to not sleep. Right. And then I spun out of control into a complete delusional psychotic manic episode, which was quite traumatic in the sense that it took 2 police officers, 2 ambulance attendants or paramedics, my mom and my boyfriend at the time. It took all of them to wrestle me into a straitjacket, and off I went to the hospital, and I was injected with haloperidol, a very powerful antipsychotic, and left in a rubber room to come back to, you know, come back to reality. And then I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder type 1 and prescribed more medication. And so I left there. Honestly, I hadn't digested the first diagnoses. I also really was secretive about the eating disorder piece. Mm-hmm. And now I have this new label to integrate into my sense of self, which I didn't integrate very well. I just stuffed it really deep down into a place that I didn't dare look, and continued on with my overachieving tendencies. And so I did that for another decade or so, and I continued overachieving, was in the corporate world. And I had a suicide attempt in 1994. Actually, it's close to the anniversary of that. It was June 9th, 1994. And I look at that as a spiritual crisis for me, because it was really that turning point, that really was the turning point for me to take a look at myself a little bit deeper than I was when I was unsuccessful in that attempt. And I woke up in out of the coma, realizing that I was had kidney failure and was going to need a kidney transplant potentially, and I was on dialysis. I really was at the bottom, and it's the same friend. Sometimes you have these friends in your lives that are just, you know, angels, really. Mm-hmm. She gave me a book to read by Marianne Williamson called A Return to Love. And so I was reading that book, and there was a passage in that book about surrender and letting go and really loving ourselves. And that's what I realized, that I had been at war with myself all this time because I didn't love, like, or accept these labels I had been given. Mm-hmm. And I had very little tools other than medication to navigate life. And when I look back now with all the knowledge that we have now as naturopathic doctors, I can look back at my younger self and realize that really that was an adrenal crisis that was going on. Mm-hmm. I had been, as I mentioned, overachieving and pushing myself hard, and yet never stopping or pausing long enough to reflect on my purpose or what I was meant to do here. To do in this life, why am I here, really? And why am I having these experiences that I'm having? So I started doing more investigation into how to heal myself on a spiritual level, turning to, you know, as simple as learning to love and accept myself. And that process has been unfolding for the last 35 years. And it's through teachers like Marianne Williamson, and we were talking earlier about Eckhart Tolle, you know, Mastin Kipp, Nancy Levin, Louise Hay, Tara Brach, all these amazing teachers and works of art that are out there with the books that they've all written, mm-hmm. that I've been a real seeker of how to heal my soul. And then I made a career change after asking myself one question, which was, if money didn't matter, what would I be doing with my life? And so after I sat with that question, the answer that kept coming was, go back to school and become a naturopathic doctor so that you can help people regain your mental health the way that you have. So my journey into naturopathic medicine started about 4 years after that suicide attempt. Again, that same friend, she's a nutritionist, and she was always be talking to me about nutrition and how important nutrition is. But I was always so focused on achieving that I never took the time to implement any self-care. You know, I didn't cook. I didn't even know how to cook, because that was always taken care of for me by my mom, who always wanted me to spend my time studying and doing what I love to do, which was wonderful, but it didn't set me up to be that great at looking after myself when I moved out. So
totally.
Yeah. So my naturopathic doctor, I started to see a naturopathic doctor myself, and then I ended up going on to see a nutritionally oriented psychiatrist named Dr. Abraham Hoffer, who was quite well known in the 1950s through to until he passed away in the early 2000s. And when I went to see him, he was 80 years old.
Wow.
And yes, and I thought to myself, this cannot be the only guy,
right?
You know, out there. There's got to be more people, which is one of the reasons why I made the career change, because I did so much better starting his protocol, which was all rooted in giving me the right nutrients to support my neurotransmitters and my hormones. And that's the physical level, which worked really well for me for a period of time. But then I kept bumping up against other issues, my core beliefs, my unconscious commitments, my subconscious beliefs, shadow beliefs. Those are all the same words really that mean the same thing. But I kept having the same internal struggle, which was ultimately comes down to, I still didn't really love and accept myself. And so I continued doing the mental, emotional, and spiritual work, which is what I've written about in Beyond the Label. So it's really been a long, long process, and it's continuing to unfold. You know, it's not, I don't really think we ever, I mean, you can stop doing the work, but for me, I'm always wanting to continue to really manage my mind so that I'm not at the mercy of it. And I think that's the key message that I want. I know for myself, like one of the chapters in my book is the myths of mental illness, and I have 22 or 23 myths there. These are all things that I was told by various doctors over the years. And I feel that they're not true, but yet this is the party line that gets mentioned when you're first diagnosed with depression, anxiety, or bipolar disorder. And our medicine, naturopathic medicine, is a really important piece of the puzzle that is often overlooked in patient care. And that's really why I wrote the book, that it's not this or that form of medicine. It's this and that mm-hmm. form of medicine.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that, Dr. Chris. I mean, through reading your book, even though I am a naturopathic doctor and these are things that I work with my patients with as well, I think the thing that stands out the most for me is your willingness to be so vulnerable and to really share your story, because I think it's through that, when people can see you where you are now, you are a naturopathic doctor and you're helping and you're guiding other people through their health, but yet then getting that inside glimpse into your life and your struggles and your challenges and knowing that you haven't always been where you are now, mm-hmm. and you have been through a lot, but you have found that strength, and you've also found that approach that has worked for you. So, I mean, I think that really gives people hope. I know that when people are struggling with any kind of mental health challenge, whether that be anxiety or depression or whatever may be going on, maybe a diagnosis of bipolar themselves, they can feel hopeless, they can feel ashamed, they can feel like people don't understand. And so I think that through what you share in your book, it gives such an inside glimpse into that. So thank you for that. And to everyone who's listening, I highly recommend picking up the book, whether or not you fully resonate with a diagnosis or a feeling that you have mental health concerns, or even if you feel like you're somebody who gets the occasional low mood and would like more strategies and tools to be able to move through that. It's such an amazing resource, also talking on things like nutrition and how you can support your body so that mental health concerns don't become an issue going forward. So actually, on that note, can you talk about the prevalence of these issues and mental health as our society? Like, what are the numbers? What does this look like for people struggling?
The numbers are high. You know, it's 1 in 4 has some mental health issue. So that's 25% of the population. Some statistics say 1 in 5. And a startling statistic I heard recently at a conference was, by the year 2030, a person globally will commit suicide every second.
Oh, that's so sad.
It's so sad. And it's a silent epidemic. It's a really silent struggle, it's a really silent illness. And so chances are, whether you're aware, whether, you know, you may not be suffering, but your colleague, you know, if you're standing in a group of four or more, you know, one of those people is maybe wearing the mask that I was wearing, that everything's on okay on the outside, but I'm dying on the inside. So I think, and another interesting statistic, but conversation I heard. So Michael Pollan has a new book out. I don't actually know the title of it, but it has to do with touching on the work of Dr. Abraham Hoffer and Dr. Humphrey Osman back in the 1950s. They were looking at using different psychedelics for mental illness. And so this conversation was around these newer drugs that they're trying to create for mental wellness. But the note that struck me that he said was, since 1950, there's been very few discoveries or investment into mental health solutions other than the SSRI medications. And it's the only illness group. So we've got cancer, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and mental health. Those are generally the top four conditions that get people at the end of the day. He said that mental health is the only classification of conditions that's actually gone up, but yet the research and solutions have gone down. So that's really powerful as well. So that, you know, there really is a need for this. I think it's becoming a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. And like you touched on there, there's so many people that are experiencing these issues, but they're really not often talked about. And as somebody who used to experience more anxiety myself, I know that I felt like I was the only one going through that. And like, it was something very shameful, I guess, in a way, to talk about, because I felt like somebody who was also high achieving and going through university and having this outward success, when I didn't feel like I could control what was going on inside, that was a failure, basically. But whenever I'm working with my patients and they fill out my intake forms, I'm still not amazed, but the number of times that I see depression and anxiety coming up as one of the top 3 or 4 concerns on the forms is even higher than those statistics that we're looking at. So even milder versions of these mental health concerns can be ongoing issues. So for yourself as a naturopathic doctor, when you are working with a new patient, what does that process look like if somebody is coming in with depression or anxiety or a diagnosis of something like bipolar or an eating disorder? Where do you start with them, and are there certain foundations that you're working on, or what does that look like for you?
So the most important thing is getting that history and taking a case. And an interesting note with myself, I actually did a year of antibiotics before I developed the eating disorder piece, which I talk about in the book. There's a lot of research that supports this whole gut-brain connection. Mm-hmm. So, and I didn't make that connection myself until I was well into my 40s. So that really highlights the importance of taking a case, which naturopathic doctors are so wonderful at, because we'd spend so much more time with people. Mm-hmm. So once I have that information and have that, and also the importance about taking a case is figuring out, based on people's experiences in their life, what they've made these experiences mean.
Right.
So the interpretation that they've, or the label, or the story that they tell themselves, that, you know, whether it's I'm not worthy, or I'm not lovable, or I'm not valuable, or I'm a failure because I experience anxiety, whatever that, however that may look for them, mm-hmm. is what I'm trying to tease out. Not, I don't necessarily suggest this on the first visit, but it's for me to tackle as we move along together. So, and then I explain to people that basically there's four aspects to you: physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. And our Western medical system is focused on the physical. So that being said, what we want to understand is, on the physical level, there's three macro systems that are contained within the one vessel that is your body, and they're all interacting with each other. It's not like they're silos set up and you've got departments with barriers, you know, blocking communication. Everything is interacting together. But the irony is, that's how our system is set up, right? You got a mental health problem, you go to the psychiatrist. You got a cardiac problem, you go to the cardiologist, and the two don't talk often. But in the body, that's not what's going on. So in the body, you have your neurotransmitters, you have your neuroendocrine or hormonal system, and your organs of detoxification. And we're all about root cause medicine. So you're wanting to figure out, what is the root cause or causes on the physical level that's creating the imbalance that's manifesting as depression and anxiety in this individual. So again, looking back over, you know, at my history, I had the disruption in the organs of detoxification with the antibiotic use. I had the, we'll call it a trauma at birth, being given up for adoption. I then was overachieving, which is, you know, a code word for stress. I was a stress case, burning the candle at both ends, which a lot of people are doing nowadays, especially with the shift that's happened over the last, I'm going to say more my generation, I guess, since the 60s, with women working more. And that's great. Don't get me wrong, but that's come at a price. Mm-hmm. It's come at a price. And the price is the levels of stress that a lot of us feel, because women, we are holding the emotional, we're managing all the emotional health of our family. We're the ones organizing the birthday parties, getting the gifts, sending the invitations, you know, paying the bills, getting the groceries, cooking the meals, and we're out there working full time. Mm-hmm. It's a lot.
There's a lot of responsibility.
It's a lot of things. So I try to, or what I do with patients is figure out, you know, which macro system, mm-hmm. and often it can be more than one.
Right.
Right. I mean, that was really highlighted for me when I started Dr. Hoffer's protocol. I did feel so much better for half of the month.
Right.
I mean, I used to be suffering the whole month. Mm-hmm. And then once I started, things lifted for half. And then I realized, well, gosh, that must be my hormones.
Right. So your neurotransmitters were being supported, but your hormone system was still missing that.
That's right. So then that had to be adjusted. And once I balanced that and then also worked on the organs of detoxification, my mental health has continued to be the best it's ever been. So as you know, we talk now, it's the best it's ever been. And I'm being free of, you know, mania. I'm just celebrating my 10th anniversary. Depression, as it's been quite some time as well. Now, anxiety, you know, anxiety trickles in, mm-hmm. I think, again, just with the, but it's really stress. I think it's the stress of daily living, mm-hmm. being a business owner, being a parent, being, you know, with aging parents and marriage and, you know, all of the things that affect our emotional well-being. So,
yeah, I mean, on that note, it still comes in for me too. And I think the thing that has changed is that when it does come up, I have better tools and a better understanding of what's going on, so then I can move through it without it getting to that point where I'm in a panic attack. And
exactly.
I can recognize it for what it is, see it as that anxiety around whatever is going on in my life or in my situation, and work with it, whether it's breathing or doing one of the other things, which I know you talk a lot about in your book, different ways that you can help to move people through things. And one of those things is what you refer to as the 7 R's. Can mm-hmm. you talk about that process and when somebody might be able to use that in their life?
Mm-hmm. So this, I think, is useful as a useful tool for everybody, whether you have mental health issues or not. So I mentioned earlier that we don't want to be at the mercy of our minds. Mm-hmm. We want to learn to manage them. And so the 7 R's is a way to do that. So what that stands for is the 7 R's of working with problematic thoughts and breaking the thought emotion cycle. So you want to recognize that in Western society, most people are living from the neck up. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we often get stuck in the pattern where we have a thought, which then triggers an emotion, which triggers another thought, which triggers another emotion. And if you can just visualize sort of a downward spiral, and that's what happens when we're stuck in our heads often with thoughts that aren't serving us. Mm-hmm. So this process is designed to help you bring awareness first and foremost to what are the thoughts going through your head. Because most of us have a little voice in our heads which keeps talking and talking and talking, and it's this little internal dialogue. And often there's an element of an inner critic that is playing a role for many people. And so you want to check in first of all. So the first R is recognize. So pay attention what's going on in your head, and then ask yourself, is this thought helpful? Especially when you're feeling a sense of anxiety rising within you, or you're depressed. Now, this was really hard for me to accept when I was depressed. So I'll come back to that.
Okay.
But then you want to refrain from following your thoughts any further. You want to stop that thought train in its tracks and relax into the breath, into this present moment, detaching from the thoughts, or letting go, or letting the thoughts just pass by, but not fueling them anymore, not giving that train any more gas to go down the track, mm-hmm. right? To head into a potential crash. You want to stop the train. So you stop it by getting into your breath. And I have an approach with breath work where I like people to put their right hand on their belly button, their left hand on their heart. So connecting with their body. Because just like I said, everyone's living from the neck up. They're also just breathing with the top little bits of their lung, especially when we get more stressed or have more demands placed on us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to understand that your lungs go all the way down to right above your diaphragm. And we want to engage the diaphragm when we're taking a proper inhalation, because when that diaphragm pulls down, what's sitting right underneath it, above your kidneys, is your adrenal gland. Mm. And this can help calm those, because what happens is the adrenal glands produce hormones in response to the thoughts you think. So the reality is, in order to change how you feel, you have to shift how you think, because your thoughts do affect how you feel. And this is the work of Candace Pert and the field of psychoneuroimmunology. Now, for myself, I found that if you had said to me, change your thoughts, change your life, I probably would have rolled my eyes at you and walked out of the room, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because in the depths of my depression, I had zero awareness about the thoughts that were plaguing me, really. I mean, I had awareness. I was obviously listening to them, because I listened to that voice that told me to commit suicide, right? That I was really, I was not offering anything to the world. And what we want to understand is, if you're totally consumed by your mind, then you become consumed by it, and you start believing every thought you have. But here's the thing: you have to learn to question your thoughts, because not every thought you have is true.
100%.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that brings in the work of Byron Katie, who is another wonderful spiritual teacher. She talks about how she regained her mental health from depression and anxiety by that one realization that she didn't have to believe every thought she had. She started asking her thoughts, is that thought true? Mm-hmm. Like 100% without any doubt, is that thought true? And a lot of the times thoughts aren't true. So why are we believing them?
Right.
But what I suggest for people, so this brings me to the next R. So the first R, again, just to recap, is recognize what's going on. What are the thoughts you're thinking? Refrain from following them any further if they're not helpful, mm-hmm. by relaxing into the breath. And then you want to resolve to repeat this process, because this is a process. You have to train your mind. So if you wanted to develop a toned bicep, you can't just lift one 25-pound barbell one time and do one repetition and expect to have a toned bicep. Your mind is no different. You have to exercise it and train it. So that's the resolve. And then the next R is reaffirm. So that's where we want to take that sentence or that whatever the thought was that we recognized. So I'm just going to use I am unworthy. It was a common theme in my life. And you would want to rephrase that to the opposite, which is I am worthy. But for myself, that was too hard initially because I didn't believe it, right? I felt like I was spraying whipping cream on a pile of bullshit.
Yeah.
Right? But I didn't understand this whole psychoneuroimmunology concept. So what I suggest to patients is if that's too big of a leap for you, mm-hmm. then just go neutral. So instead of I am unworthy, just go to I am. Mm,
I like that.
Mm-hmm. There's no charge. It's neutral. And you're not sort of caught in the egoic mind with labeling mm-hmm. yourself. Mm. The sixth R is to reflect. I have stumbled. I have stumbled many times. So every time I've stumbled into the pit of depression where I think, you know, that's where I've spent most of my time with bipolar disorder. The manias have been short and infrequent, but nevertheless, they have happened. But the majority of my time has been in depression and anxiety and struggling with the body image and the weight and the eating disorder piece. So I have reflected every time I stumble, well, how did I get here again? And that's where I talk about the 10 steps in Beyond the Label. So the 10 steps are diet, sleep, exercise, managing stress, looking at my thoughts, emotions, how I behave and react in the world, environment, and then spirituality, love and compassion. So, you know, inevitably there is an explanation for why you've stumbled. And it can be more than just the fact that you're not taking your medication. Right? If you don't have the essential nutrients to make your neurotransmitters and your hormones, you're not going to make them and you're not going to feel good.
Totally. Yeah. Can we touch on that? Because I think when people think, especially more conventionally, about depression in particular, but also anxiety, we see all of this discussion about it being a result of low serotonin levels typically. And so what is your take on this, and how does supporting things by taking an antidepressant differ from what you would be doing with your patients by supporting neurotransmitter balance more naturally?
Mm-hmm. So first of all, it's really important to assess the level of depression that somebody is. And there's many tools out there that you can use to do that. If you're a clinician listening or even a patient listening, there's many different depression monitoring forms available, or just simply asking on a scale of 1 to 10, how severe is this? And if they're suicidal. Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, I'm not anti-medication, but I am minimum dose for maximum benefit. And I really liked Dr. Hoffer's philosophy, which was, you know, these medications do serve a purpose, but you want to treat it like you would a broken leg. So if you need to use antidepressants, it's like a cast while we repair your mind and then get you on solid ground so that you can taper off this medication, but you have to build in the essential nutrients if there's gaps in that. So I assess patients' diets mm-hmm. to figure out, are they deficient in these essential amino acids or essential nutrients that we need. So a key one with serotonin, it's derived from tryptophan, which is an essential amino acid. And tryptophan isn't necessarily guaranteed to go and form serotonin in the body. because first and foremost, its priority is to be converted into niacin to be used in every single cell in our body to produce what's called ATP, the energy currency that all our cells need to survive. Now, if an individual is under a lot of stress, and many people are, that the tryptophan that comes in through the diet will actually get formed into something called quinolinic acid, which is actually considered neurotoxic. So understanding the stress levels of a person, their nutrient levels, you know, are they deficient in these essential nutrients? And that was my case. I had been a vegetarian. Again, I had deep cracks in my nutritional foundation with the eating disorder. And there were a few essential nutrients I was deficient in. So B12, iron, the omega-3s, tryptophan, to name a few. Mm-hmm. And all of these nutrients, tryptophan, when it get the pathway in the body to get converted to serotonin, there's a few steps. So it has to go to 5-HTP and then to serotonin. And there's cofactors that are required to make those steps in the body. And again, if you're deficient in those nutrients, you're not going to get there. So I am for using these medications depending on the severity of the depression. And if someone is suicidal, I think, yes, you do need those. You need to have those. That hammer is a very useful hammer. Mm-hmm. It's the right tool for the job. But then we get the person feeling better. So then they feel like they can cook for themselves. Then they can look at getting the exercise going and then looking at the stress and looking at all those 10 steps I talked about. But it's hard to do that when you're a 10 out of 10 depressed.
For sure. Right? Yeah, mm-hmm. No, definitely. So I think what you're saying is, I mean, as the vast majority, if not all naturopathic doctors do, are where we shine is the focus is on looking at and identifying the root cause. And so that, of course, can sometimes take time. And so using something like an antidepressant can be something that can help to create that shift while we're doing that deeper work and looking at things on all these different levels. From a nutrient deficiency standpoint, a lot of the ones you touched on, the B12 and the iron especially, are things that I see all of the time in my practice, iron especially for women. Are there others that you see coming up a lot in regards to the mental health space and things that you focus in on more than others?
So vitamin B6 and a magnesium as well.
Yes.
So a lot of women are on the birth control pill.
Right.
And the birth control pill depletes nutrients in the body, B6 being one of them. And B6 is really important for supporting hormone formation, but also for neurotransmitter, that conversion to serotonin. So what I really want people to understand is, you know, you're not a failure if you need to go on medication, but really it should be a short-term thing. It shouldn't be that you're a forever customer for the pharmaceutical company. Mm-hmm. And or even actually for supplements too. So you want to use food first. You really want to use food. But sometimes, well, often the symptom of depression is you don't want to eat.
Right.
Right. So it's a bit of a catch-22. How are you going to use food when you don't want to eat? So that's where the medications can be helpful. But my goal is to have people be able to support themselves. So eventually you don't need that medication anymore. And you want to understand that for every pharmaceutical out there, there is a nutraceutical equivalent. Mm-hmm. So even with benzodiazepines, which are often used for anxiety, there is GABA. There are many wonderful herbs and nutrients that can help you support you from that perspective. Sorry. So I wanted to just add that.
Yeah, definitely.
Because often what happens is people go off antidepressants. And this is what happened to me. I went on them and then I go off them and I ended up always in the pit of depression. And it was because nobody ever looked at my foundation of my nutrition, which had those big holes in it. So once I plugged those holes, then I was able to come off the antidepressant.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you. Nutrition definitely creates the biggest foundation of how I approach health with my patients. Because again, if we're not getting in our diets what we need to be able to produce neurotransmitters and hormones, then we're going to have that deficiency. And then I also look at things from other standpoints, foods that might be creating inflammation in the body. And then, of course, that inflammation being one of those things that can, instead of our bodies producing the serotonin, producing that quinolinic acid. So yeah, there's so many things that come into play for anyone interested interested in looking more at things from that standpoint, I talk about food sensitivities, so that food type of reaction, in episodes 4 and 5 of this podcast. Is that something that you find links in, or processed foods, food sensitivities, things like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I do find, so this concept of leaky gut syndrome and dysbiosis, so imbalance in the bacteria, that contributes to inflammation, which contributes to this concept of brain on fire. So we absolutely have to address that piece of the puzzle. What I find for a lot of people, and including myself, it was really daunting the first time to see, when I went to see my naturopath, because I did the testing and I had to cut out wheat, dairy, sugar, eggs, chocolate, tomatoes, which at that point I was like, what's left? What's left to eat? Because remember, I didn't know how to cook and I really wasn't interested in either. So I had to really develop that interest. And I think for people, what I have found for my, when I work with patients, is instead of saying cut all this out. So yes, we want to educate and understand, but I do find the approach that I use is I ask them to increase certain foods, adding them into the diet, like the tryptophan forming foods, foods that are higher in B6, liver cleansing foods, so that with the intention that those are going to outcompete these quote unquote bad choices. And then over time, then they start to feel the difference that the food makes in their body, then they're more inclined to want to drop the wheat, the dairy, the sugar. Those are the big culprits.
Definitely. Yeah, I definitely find people are at different points along the spectrum as to where they are currently with their diet. And that 100% changes how I approach things on that level for people, as well as what it is that they're experiencing for symptoms. And so depression and anxiety, it definitely can be one of those spaces where people I find really do benefit first and foremost from correcting the potential nutrient deficiencies and balancing things there before we move into those next levels. What are some other aspects that you focus on? Is there anything in regards to stress management or exercise, or just to round out this lens in which you're kind of assessing health for people through?
So the stress management piece is a really big piece of the puzzle. It's just a really big piece. So to use that, I have a adrenal stress indicator that I ask patients to complete. And so I start with using the 7 R's, and the 7th R, which I forgot to mention, was to reward yourself, which speaks to self-compassion. So again, we're wanting to raise the voice of the compassionate side of yourself versus this inner critic. And I often say to my patients, listen, if you wouldn't talk to your 5-year-old or to a child the way you're speaking to yourself, then why is it acceptable for you to speak to you in the manner in which you are? Because here's the thing, you're going to be with you for the rest of your life. You're with you longer than anyone is going to be with you. So we want to get that relationship right from this concept of self-love, the sense of sense and sense of self, sense of worth. So the 7 R's is a great place to help with stress management. So when you feel, and you want to figure out for yourself, what situations do you feel stressed, you know, in? Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, like I said to one of my patients last night, I live in the north in Edmonton. So we have very long winters and quite short springs. And so in May, everyone's just itching to get out there. And so their kids are often signed up in soccer and baseball, which means that they're often out 4 nights a week, which means that parents are starting to burn the candle at both ends. And I think children are too, because bedtimes get compromised. So I said to her, you know, what moms need to do is set up once a week. I'm going to take the kids, you know, grab 4 kids or 3 other children, and you get a week off. Right? You don't have to be at every single sporting event that your child participates in.
Right.
You know, you really don't. But I know a lot of us feel. And if you do, and if you are, I would encourage you to not be on your phone while you're supposed to be present and watching your child, which is what a lot of people are doing. So use that time instead to be preparing the meals, to be, you know, getting ready for the next day. So that brings me to sleep. So sleep is another foundational principle for regaining your mental health. And this is another area that often is off in a lot of people. And it can often be off because we're stressed about a situation. It can be whether it's interpersonal conflict at work, concerned about finances, marriage, children, whatever. I mean, there's so many things that are weighing on people. So getting an understanding as to what is weighing on people and then offering them solutions around that and ways to navigate this sort of stress bucket, so to speak, I think is a really important piece. But sleep is one of those ways to help, because the more rested you are, the better able you are to handle the turbulence that may come your way throughout the course of a day. So I think that is a really underappreciated self-care step mm-hmm. in a lot of people's lives. And that's one thing, especially with bipolar disorder, I think is a critical key to managing the mania side of the puzzle.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, sleep is when our brains are really doing that restorative work, and so is our liver. So getting in that adequate sleep, I always suggest people 7-8 hours. I find it varies a little bit on an individual basis. For me, I know it's 8 that I really need. And so that can be so supportive. And also, I think what I want to emphasize is all of this work, especially in regards to repatterning thoughts, it's such a practice. And my background initially before naturopathic medicine is in neuroscience. And so there's a lot of that talk about neuroplasticity and how we can change basically the way that our brain is wired. But I know it's not something that's easy when we're starting that process. And so for people who are trying to change that thought pattern, I often use the analogy of two creek beds. And so the water right now has this pattern of going down the creek bed that it has been going down for a long time. And so it's a deeper creek bed. It's a lot easier to keep pushing that flow down in that direction. And to initially change the flow, we have to dam that creek bed and we have to divert it in this other direction. And that can take a lot of work, and the force of the water can keep blowing out that dam until it's fully built. But once we've got things shifted over in the other direction, that more positive flow of thoughts becomes more ingrained. And then that's so much easier. It gets to the point where that's the natural pattern, the natural way that the water or the thoughts flows. So if you're in the early stages, anyone listening, just have patience with this process. It's all about just that consistent work and effort in getting things going down that way and catching yourself, but then don't beat up on yourself if you find that you're going back to that negative headspace. Know that it's natural. It's okay for that to happen. And then just choose a different thought. Maybe take yourself through those 7 R's and shift that forward. One thing that I read in your book, Dr. Chris, that I liked, as you talk about the I'll be happy when list. And I find that that's something that so many people get stuck in as well. I know I have been there, just always counting forward until the next step. And it wasn't until I was traveling, long-term traveling in New Zealand, and it's all I had wanted to do. I'd literally been counting down for a full year until I could go and be in New Zealand. And it was there that I decided or figured out that I wanted to be a naturopathic doctor within the first few weeks. And then immediately I caught myself that all I wanted to do was go to school, which looking back, I now see is crazy. But so it was that really started to recognize that pattern for me of I'll be happy when I'm more successful or I'm doing this. And I'm conscious of that now. But can you talk to that? And is that something that you still use with your patients or have people do that exercise? And what does that look like?
Yeah. Well, first, I just want to acknowledge you for that beautiful analogy with the creek. And because that is exactly what we're doing. What I say to people is, you know, you've got a highway 2, which is one of the big highways here in Alberta. You've got a highway 2 going a certain way in your brain. We just need to build a new highway.
Yeah.
Right. We just need to build a new highway.
Totally.
And that concept of neuroplasticity is really important, which for people to understand is it just means that you're not fixed in any way, shape, or form. You can create new neural pathways in your brain and learn to think a different way. We just have to ignite that fire, so to speak, within you. But I'll be happy when is a real trap that a lot of people fall into. And so what I really emphasized to people is the teaching of Eckhart Tolle. So his book, The Power of Now, and Stillness Speaks, as well as A New Earth. And I was telling you earlier that I had just attended a retreat with him teaching, I mean, me and 700 people. It wasn't just me one-on-one.
Although that would be pretty amazing.
But nevertheless, it was wonderful to be in his presence. And this is what he talks about. And what I teach patients is you want to understand that all you have is now, mm-hmm. right? All you really have is this moment now. The past has happened. It's done. It's over. It exists as a memory in your mind. But what is a memory? A memory is a thought, mm-hmm. right? So, and what a lot of people do is they, especially in relationships, if you've navigated a difficult relationship, say you're divorced, a lot of people bring the baggage of their ex into the present. And it's just really important when you meet someone that you're meeting them with no agenda, with no ego. And so signs that you're in your ego are when you have an agenda, whether it's hidden or obvious, mm-hmm. When you're blaming, when you're comparing, when you're complaining, when you're justifying, when you're judging. These are all constructs of the egoic mind. And we're wanting to learn to move from what Eckhart Tolle refers to as sort of the surface turbulence on the surface of the ocean, which is the constructs of the egoic mind, like I just mentioned, blaming, criticizing, etc., mm-hmm. to this sort of deeper sense of self that is within you, which is the depth of the ocean where the stillness lies. So the more that you can continue to pause and bring yourself back to the present moment, whenever you recognize, and using the seven R's, so whenever you recognize that you're stuck in blame, complaining, comparing, I'll be happy when thinking, futuristic thinking, thinking of the past, regret, guilt, all of that are all stories and constructs of your mind. So the more awareness that you can bring to that it is simply that, and the more that you can shift and drop down into your breath mm-hmm. and into this moment. So an interesting thing, that a real big light bulb that went on for me at this retreat, was how much I have played into the victim mentality. Mm. That how I've used my suffering as a sense of fuel for my ego to survive. Mm. That, well, nobody suffered as much as I have. Right? Even that story mm-hmm. is just that. It's a story. So how this looks in reality is it's always a constant checking in with yourself and getting curious too, adding an element of curiosity. But wow, where did that thought come from? And even for myself, sometimes it hasn't happened recently, but a lot of doubt came out about this book. I had a lot of fear and a lot of concern about coming out with bipolar disorder. I hadn't been public about that. And I had a lot of trepidation about being vulnerable and public about it, mm-hmm. which I recognize is really a way that my egoic mind was really trying to protect me in a sense. But what we want to understand, and how I really worked through all of those doubtful thoughts, was I just got really curious about, wow, where did that thought come from? And is it serving me in this moment to be stuck in fear? And can I let it go and just move into that space and stay with the breath? Maybe the emotion is, and you know, ride out the emotional wave and move into the sense of love and compassion for myself, because I'm just scared. That's it. Mm-hmm. Coming back to I'll be happy when, it's a false construct. It's based mm-hmm. in the future. You're not going to be happy when, you're happy now. You're happy now. It's a choice that you make. And it's hard. I know it's hard when you're depressed. Yeah.
For sure. I love that. And I can just tell how much work you've put in to your recovery and your personal development and everything that comes with that, because you have such tremendous personal awareness now, because it takes a lot of vulnerability and really looking deep into those patterns to recognize that sense of victimhood or any of the patterns that have fed into that. And it's not wrong to feel that way, right? Like that, mm-hmm. that is all, it feeds into our identity, and we build these constructs
That's right.
based on our experiences. And so just taking the time to those listening to recognize that and not to have that shame or that guilt around that, but just to look at it. I love how you said with curiosity and recognize those patterns is amazing. I know that there are a lot of people listening today and that they've gained so many great takeaways, but especially to those who might feel a little bit overwhelmed or maybe they're feeling close to their rock bottom right now and not knowing what to do or feeling overwhelmed by all of the things they could do. To those people especially, if they were to do one thing right after this show or sometime today that can help them just to gain a little bit of initial forward momentum, what would you suggest? Where can they start with that?
It's I think what you want to start with is just hearing this, that you are here now because you are meant to be here. And despite what's happened to you in your life, despite the stories you might be telling yourself, you have a purpose and you have worth. So when you're really down and depressed, I know how hard this is to ask you to pick up that phone, to make a call, to say, hey, I need help. Mm-hmm. It's like asking, for me, it was like asking, the analogy I used is like asking a deaf person to hear or a blind person to see. Asking someone who's depressed to reach out for help, it's very, very hard for them. But you have to dig deep. You really have to dig deep. Mm-hmm. And if you're not, say, at that place where it's feeling unbearable, I guess the main message is it might feel like it's unbearable, but just if you can tap into what thoughts might be playing a role, if you can just even ask that simple question, are any of these thoughts true? Mm-hmm. And where did these come from? And do I have to believe these anymore? Mm-hmm. Can I just change that dialogue and start new with a new thought that's just neutral, like I am? Mm-hmm. But if you're feeling a little more better, a little more better, which isn't very good English, but you know, if you're just feeling like, you know, something's off and you're maybe a 4 or 5, 6 out of 10 on the depression scale, 10 being the worst, you're kind of in the middle of the road there. Mm-hmm. Then the best suggestions, I think, that we didn't really talk too much about in the conversation that we've had is the exercise piece. Mm-hmm. You know, exercise and moving the energy, shaking out the energy, getting the circulation going. There's a quote that exercise is the most underutilized tool for depression and anxiety, while pharmaceuticals are the most overutilized tool.
I agree.
And I can tell you that there have been times when I've been so depressed that actually the only thing I accomplished in a day when I was depressed, and sometimes it took me 10, 12, 14 hours to move from the bed to the door and out, was getting out there and doing something that I loved and moving my body in a way. And I would encourage you to engage someone, you know, whether you can go for a walk with a friend, or a run, or play tennis, or even play cards. It doesn't necessarily have to be exercise, but the research is there for exercise, that it supports endorphins, it gets the blood flowing, it gets the energy moving, and it helps that sleep piece of the puzzle. And then it helps the appetite piece of the puzzle. So the exercise piece, I really want to emphasize doing something you love, preferably with somebody you love. Mm-hmm. And if you don't feel you have any connection with anybody, there's lots of meetup groups. And if you don't know what you like, then just start getting curious about what you could do. There's so many things to get involved in nowadays, but you got to get involved in you. So don't wait for it to happen.
Yeah. I love that advice. There's a lot of great takeaways there. And that actually reminds me that there is another podcast episode that people could go to as a follow-up to this, which is episode 3 of the Healthy Life Redesign podcast. It's 8 practices to boost your mood naturally. And those are 2 of the practices, actually, getting active and getting social. So I always tell people, if you can combine those 2 things, and if you can do that outside, which is another one of those, then that is all exciting. exceptional. Thank you so much, Dr. Chris. There's been so many absolutely amazing takeaways, and thank you for sharing your story with everyone through the show today. For those who would like to work with you or find your book, where can they go to get more information and to follow you on social media and everything from that perspective? Mm-hmm.
Just, I think my website, so Dr. and then Christina, C-H, with an, and then A, and then my last name, which is not easy to spell, Bjorndal, so BJORNDAL.com. The books are available on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Chapters, if you're in Canada. I'd love to get them into clinicians' offices, too, so we'll start working on that. And I'll just mention, too, that I have a course that is available for people. It's a great adjunct. It dives deeper into the concepts discussed in the book. And it's a great adjunct if you're working with a naturopathic doctor, which I encourage everybody to be working with a naturopathic doctor. Mm-hmm. So find a local ND in your area that can help you. I'm here as a support to that doctor if they need. I've also created a course for clinicians that I'm launching as well, who want a little bit more training in this approach. But a naturopathic doctor will really help you get on the right track. Absolutely. It's the best investment you can make.
I agree. So I will post links in the show notes. So for the show notes, people listening, you can go to healthyliferedesign.com/14. And so I will post links to Dr. Chris's website. And I believe your program is listed on the website as well. Is that right?
There is. Yeah. And as a gift, there's a forgiveness meditation that I have created that I'll send to you to offer. I guess people can find it in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll put instructions in the show notes there.
And that'll give them a little taster as to the course if they're interested, or even if you just want to dive deeper into the concept of forgiveness.
Fabulous.
So that's, yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you for that. I will put that link in the show notes. I will also include a link to the Canadian Association of Naturopathic Doctors so that if you are listening to this and you are not near either Dr. Chris or myself, that you can find someone local to you to work with as well to help to support you through your journey. So thank you again, Dr. Chris. And thank you to everyone tuning in to today's show. If you were inspired or you learned anything new through this interview, please share this episode on your social media or send it out directly to your friends and family. Remember again that it's about 1 in 4 people who experience mental health concerns, and those people might not be talking about it or sharing it openly, and in fact, they are probably not. So by you sharing this show and getting this out there, you are doing a great service to people because you never know where they are in their own journey. I hope that by getting the show out there, that Dr. Bjorndal's expertise and words of wisdom can really help to transform the life and health of as many people as possible who need this support. If you are also a new listener to the Healthy Life Redesign podcast, know that I release new episodes weekly, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you listen. You can also sign up for email notifications when I post a new show, and I will link to that in the show notes page for this episode again, which you can find at healthyliferedesign.com/14. I look forward to having you back here again next week when I will be sharing more strategies, tools, and inspiration to help you own your health and live a life you love. Bye for now.